Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey. Steve's not here today because he's at the NEC car show, where I guess you guys are going this weekend.
Yeah, we're going tomorrow.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Anything in particular or just going for a look around?
To be honest, I forgot all about it.
Right.
We've been invited down by the Military Vehicle Trust, so we're going to go and sit with them guys and have a little look. To be honest, I actually quite like the classic car show.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in modern cars in any way, but I think me and my dad have been to the classic car show ever since I was tiny, so I've been for a few years. So
it is an enormous show. Like, you struggle to get around it, but I guess if you just go and look at what you're interested in, it's the way forward. I haven't actually introduced you. It's just I'm sat here in a very cool workshop surrounded by military stuff with Joe Hughes and Jack Westaway from the YouTube channel Mr. Hughes. We've been doing a very cool feature for the magazine, which we'll no doubt see in Land Rover Monthly very soon. And thank you for inviting me along. It's been a good day, isn't it?
I think it's been a bit of a laugh.
Yeah, definitely. It's been really interesting to sort of get behind the scenes and actually see what we're probably all so familiar with on our screens in person.
The professionalism to go with it.
Oh, absolutely. I'd expect nothing less. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. We've even got the main health and safety officer, Ted, with us, which is an absolute honour.
No one's going to be able to see him. And he is quite quiet, so they're not going to
hear. Nobody's going to see any of us, mate.
That's a good point.
We might get a little picture of him for the thumbnail for the podcast.
been
good crack. We've seen a few interesting Land Rovers today in various states of repair and disrepair.
Yeah, apologies for breaking the one just before you got here.
That's all right. If anything, it just adds to the backstory. But
Land Rover owners going to be like, no, that doesn't happen.
Broken.
They don't break down.
I don't believe a word of it.
Yeah, well, right when you needed it.
Well, it is what it is. It's fine. We still had a good crack. And we did actually manage to photograph it. We were lucky enough to be just up the road from where it's currently getting some TLC. All good. But Jack.
Yes.
We'll start with you for a change, shall we? Go on.
Yeah,
let's do that.
He hates on and I'll have to go off my phone.
Are you into it?
Me.
I
hate Land Rovers. every kind of Land Rover, I hate them all.
I mean,
completely. I prefer Discoveries.
Yeah, you made that very clear. Yeah. You insulted my Series 3 earlier.
Yeah, I don't really know why I like Discoveries, because they've only ever treated me badly.
Right, okay.
But I just have something about them, just obviously does something for me. I like them.
Your family history, to be fair, you've always been into off-roading.
I've always quite enjoyed off-roading, but I don't know, they were always Jeep people.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh. Really?
Ooh. Yeah,
his family were into Jeeps.
Yeah, big into Jeeps.
Heathens.
My granddad was a trialing, is it trialing?
Yeah, trialing, yeah.
He was quite good at that.
But right.
I was always in Jeeps. And then I don't really know where the Defenders kind of took over from Jeeps, didn't they? And then Dad was big into Defenders.
You had a Defender before me.
Yeah, I've had a Defender before, and it was an utter heap of junk.
You had bought a particularly good one.
Yeah, there was no floor over the, no tunnel over the gearbox.
Nice.
You could put your hand straight through or drop anything straight through.
Right.
It also made conversation impossible.
Yeah, and do you remember it was like a TDI, but TDCI damage.
Yeah.
Badly.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
So you had no room for your knees, which for me is no problem, but for anybody taller, no room. The spare seat wasn't bolted down.
So they put the dash in and then just not bothered
doing
anything
else. Gone, I'm done with this, I'm going to sell it.
Yeah, so
right, okay.
They put the dash in and from a glance, say like outside from 2,000 miles away,
it
looked all right.
Yeah.
But when you're in it, they'd like, you know how the TDCI dash is like sort of rounded,
Finish
rounded. And what they've done is like cut the bottom out of the Tupperware.
Right.
And then got some Smith's gauges from wish.com. Like one of them was blue, backlit, and then the other was green. Only about half of them worked. And it just looked absolutely...
It looked like a gash Christmas tree.
Yeah. Nice.
It was nice. Terrible. Yeah. I think it was basically made out of several stolen Land Rovers. That's how I could... It's
right.
What it looked like. The bulkhead was TDCI.
Well, the doors a different colour.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they were.
Yeah, the bonnet wasn't off it.
No, the bonnet was had all the armoured plating on it, didn't it?
You opened the bonnet up and looked at the engine and it... Why? Was it a 300? I can't remember. The engine wasn't any trouble, but I just...
No, the engine wasn't trouble. I think it was a 300, yeah.
It didn't have things like, you know, washer bottles or any of that. If
right.
You open the bonnet, it's like, where is everything? Yeah. It was just an engine.
Sounds like they'd done the very bare minimum.
Don't think there was even a fan. There was a radiator.
It was a wonderful piece of equipment.
The prop shafts
fell off twice.
I can see how this tainted your view of Defenders, because it doesn't sound like you've
twice.
Got...
Yes, it was right up my street as cars go, because it was very unreliable. but it very quickly lost its its sense of, I don't know what.
Well, it wasn't very good to start with.
Well, it wasn't very good, no, but I fell out of love with it quite fast.
Right, got you.
Because it just kept going wrong. I mean, like, fairly serious things.
If it hadn't gone wrong, so, he'd run out of fuel, which
I'm very good at doing that.
Yeah,
blade car I've ever had.
You know,
but yeah, then I swapped that in for a very reliable Ford Fiesta. And I had that for 5 years, and that never let me down.
Don't
apart from
lure the Land Rover.
I'm not going to.
With Ford Fiesta.
For 5 years, I had no problems.
To be fair.
Yeah. Then I went back to Discoveries, because I found a very nice one that I liked. And did that up quite nice. And that never really let me down until one day. And I wasn't in the best of moods. And it let me down at the...
It was something really minor, wasn't it? Oh, the key fob.
The key fob wouldn't work, so it wouldn't snow.
Mobilised.
Okay. Yeah, it mobilised itself. And I wasn't in a good mood, and I smashed the... out of it.
You weren't supposed to swear.
Yeah, I wasn't supposed to swear, but you can't describe that any other way.
A jolly good...
Yeah, I get a jolly good thrash.
A jolly good thrash. The boat.
I ripped out the headline in where the thing was. I ripped that out.
Yeah.
I smashed up the dash in front of me. I punched the radio. Most of the stuff inside. Yeah, I know. I lost my...
You must have been having a really bad day.
I was having quite a bad day. And then that wasn't enough, because then I got out, must have lost my temper again, and decided to hit it with a branch a lot. So
I was like a fly on the wall watching at the time, because I was there.
Oh, right. Like,
you could see the anger building up, and he was sort of... when he was smashing the dashboard with his fist, he was hurting himself, but he was getting more angry than he was actually, you know, hurting himself. Then he got out of the truck, slammed the door, and then found that there was a metal bar leaning up against a tree, picked the metal bar up, and then started smacking the windscreen, the side of the...
Yeah, I smacked the windscreen,
the back lights out of it.
Yeah, I did that. And so that got parked up for 6 months.
Eventually, he ran out of energy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sounds like an expensive...
It wasn't the cleverest thing I could have done, no.
Well,
I fully agree. But where we were working with a fleet of, what, I think there was about 20 Discoveries. Most of them were the 300 model.
Right.
There were a few TD5s. So when I did come round to mending it, once I fell back in love with it, because it took me 6 months to get over that fallout, once I came back in love with it, it actually didn't cost me a lot
to
mend it, because we ordered most of the parts on the system against the vehicles that we were mending.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Got it.
That worked out perfectly in my way, because I think in total it cost me £250 to mend that truck.
That's all right.
Yeah,
that's not bad going at all.
No.
But your current one, you've clearly not completely lost the love.
No, to be fair, even after that one, I sold that because money was a bit of an issue, so I sold that.
Mm.
And then Joe bought me another one.
Is that the one you've got now?
That's the one I've got now.
Right.
But then Joe bought me that. And then what went wrong with that one? That had a problem, didn't it?
Autobox.
The Autobox. It lost its oil. I didn't have the money to repair that at the time. So what I went out instead and...
Parked that up
and bought another one. I had money to buy another one.
Right.
You didn't have money to repair the £200 thing.
No, I don't like autos.
Okay.
So I didn't want to mend that. What I wanted to do was an auto swap.
The ZF Auto in the TD5 Discovery is just about the most frustrating...
Yeah. I hate them.
It's
you've got to have the patience of a saint.
If they are better when remapped.
They are.
But the thing that annoys me most about that gearbox is torque converter lockup is bang on 50 mile an hour. So when you're doing single carriageways through the countryside,
it's not too bad.
It's either revving its nuts off, or it's locked up and you've got no torque.
Yeah.
So
that's basically what I... And I also find they're much worse on fuel.
Oh
they are, yeah, worse. Definitely.
Yeah.
So what I did is I went out and I bought another auto.
Obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
So I'll just point out, I tried to not allow it. It's like, I think you get another truck. It's like, yeah, okay, cool. It's like, I found this. It's really tidy. It's done low mileage. Will you come and look at it? And I can't remember what I was doing, but like...
Doing was being a bad friend and not coming out. That's basically what you were doing.
I couldn't be less interested in Discovery. It's like, I'm going to look at Discovery. I was like, I'm busy. So he goes off and looks at this amazing, immaculate Discovery.
Seb came with.
Tells me how great it is, so ends up buying it, comes back, and I look at it, I was like, Jack, where's the rear tow bar? It's like, it always doesn't have one. And then I look underneath, and you can see where it's rotted off.
Oh, lovely.
And then I look to the chassis, and it's all like blown and...
It's not bad, it'd been welded over it.
No, it was terrible. It was worse. I was like, Jack, did you look at this with Ray Charles's glasses? I looked underneath, there was more oil leaks. If there was something that held oil, it was leaking. It was leaking brake fluid, it was leaking transfer box, it was leaking gearbox, it was leaking diesel, it was leaking engine oil, it was leaking diff oil. It was leaking battery acid. It was just a jump.
Sounds like a right gem, Jack.
It was. It was.
And on top of that, it was automatic again. With the flashing lights in the dashboard where it can't make up its
mind. Oh, yeah. The M&S lights.
It did have some of them on.
Beautiful.
It didn't have them on when I set off.
Right, okay.
The only thing I will say is the interior was clean.
The interior was very nice.
Which doesn't
matter. And my plan at the time...
How long does an interior last with you?
That one's still quite clean. Don't start on me. It's just the passenger footwell doesn't last long at all.
It's kind of imagine like a bin lorry.
Yeah,
like a little bit like with Jack. It's like it's all right for the drive, but everywhere
it's not been the compactor of a bin lorry.
Right, I was going to say
a Dennis dust cart.
I did look through the window earlier, and I thought Joe's been hopping in and out of it all day, and I thought
there's an act to opening the door. You've got to kick the rubber.
I was going to say it would be dropping out. But
yeah, well, I do eat a lot of junk and drink a lot of junk, so that all goes straight in the sink. Yeah. So yeah, and then that one lasted me six months.
Why did you give up with that one in the end?
Oh, because the gearbox.
The gearbox did the same thing the first one did.
Brilliant.
So then I parked that up, I was going to sell that one that Joe bought me, basically.
Right.
That was the plan.
The one you're driving now.
The one I'm driving.
Right. Okay.
So the guy came down to pick it up. And we were talking about Land Rovers in general. I was talking about how I'd just like one, how I'd like it. So, like, done up a little bit with a manual box in it and all this. And he was like, well, why don't I just make this one into the one you want? And I was kind of like, I can't really afford it, but how much is it going to be? And he was like, oh, it'll be this much. And I thought, well, it'll take him about a month. I might be able to scrape the money together after that. So I was like, yeah, go on then, do that. And then the plan was I was then just going to sell that other one and just keep the one good one.
Got you.
And to be honest, I picked it up and it was all right, wasn't it? It wasn't too awful. It's done the Land Rover thing. I've developed a couple of leaks since.
Almost immediately?
Yeah, almost immediately. But most of what he did is spot on.
Right.
So I can't fault that too.
So it's better matched up with airbags.
Yeah, airbags. One of the airbags kept blowing itself up harder than it should do, and then blowing itself off.
Nice. Okay.
So, and then, yeah, and then
I
nearly killed myself replacing the airbag. I did kill myself. I nearly chopped my legs off.
Just so people can picture this, imagine sitting on flat concrete without chocking the vehicle or putting a handbrake on, and then jacking up with a bottle jack,
Land Rover,
via the axle that is round, and then when he started barring on whatever it was to try and knock the airbag off, the bottle jack just started to move and the vehicle went forward and he's laying under it with his legs under it. And like it fell and the axle slammed down between his leg.
Oh, I didn't. No, I managed to get my legs out of the way.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I'm going to jump in here and say, check out the tech pages of the Land Rover Monthly magazine for all the things you should do when you're working on your Land Rover.
No, don't do that.
Because, great stories.
Struggle and nearly hurt yourself. That's the way I look at things.
Great stories are only great if you don't chop your legs.
No, it'd been a bit more of a dire situation had it landed on
you. Because didn't we work on heavy vehicles and he went, we both allowed that to happen. We looked at it and thought, that was stupid. Even for us, that was dumb.
Yeah, but we don't have that trouble because with tanks, when you're working on wheels, nothing ever moves. You have to beat the out of it for it to move.
You need to just wind down the swearing.
Yeah, I'm trying.
You're making a lot of work for me in the edit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologise.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
So you're happy with it now, though? Is that manual converted then?
That's manual converted now.
Nice.
So yes, I'm fairly happy with it. I just wish it would stop developing other little problems.
Yeah.
What issues has it got right now? Front prop shaft.
Oh.
Which we bent. I can't blame anybody for that. We were trying to pull out the winch cable on a Centurion Arv, and it obviously had too much grip for the prop shaft to handle, and we just corkscrewed it. No, I've never seen it. I was actually quite impressed.
I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw it. So yeah, it's
quite a thing. You will see a picture of it in the magazine.
Yeah,
holding it quite like a proud father.
Quite an achievement.
Yeah,
to be fair.
But no, bar that, the only things it's got problems with is it's got a slight steering leak, which, to be honest, is at the stage where it's not bad enough to mend. I just keep topping it up.
Yeah, because it's my oil that I pay for.
So yeah.
Refresh your top.
It makes no difference. Even if it was my oil, I still wouldn't mend it because I know fucking...
Oil's cheaper than labour, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Jack's coming. You used to be able to tell because you could hear a TD5. Now you can just hear...
Oh, the power steering pump having a little party with itself.
Yeah, it's, when I mend it, I'm going to replace the pump.
Yeah.
But I can't be arsed at the minute, so...
It'll park it up for 6 months.
Yeah.
That happens. Then it'll buy another truck with
steering. Yeah, yeah, there's a bit of a theme. But yeah, bar that, it's fine.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
Oh,
it does sound.
Yeah, it sounds really, really
it's been, it's got... half-stroke pipe tied up.
Did Gareth Empire map that, or did he map yours?
He mapped mine. He needs to map that.
Yeah.
Is that a standard tune at the moment?
Oh, it's disappointing.
I believe so.
Is it?
It is slow.
It is quite slow.
You definitely need to get just a stage one map on.
Yeah, I will. Once Gareth comes back down,
he needs to give it the full blow.
Well, I'm probably going to give it the stage two and blow it up.
Yeah.
Well, I may as well.
They do. TD5s are so top. Like, they take a serious amount of power. You can make serious power.
You can make serious power. Yeah.
He's so
you can't make it for long.
He's no. He's clever with the mapping. He is bloody clever.
Decent. Full width intercooler and a decent tune.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially now it's manual converted, it'll be worth it because you'll have to.
Well, and you have a spare intercooler as well, don't you?
No, because it went on the Black Land Rover.
Oh, cheers for that.
I think that's good. Everyone's different now.
How dare you use a part you paid for? God. But yeah, I'll probably go a bit extreme and get a lot of power out of it and drive it around like an idiot and probably stick it in the ditch at some point.
Hopefully not.
You never know.
It's got a great... some people go far too far with the lift and the
oh, yeah, I can't... Any more than 2 inches, I can't get into, so...
Yeah,
fair enough what he misses
there. Well, there is that, yeah.
Wee. No, it does. Sits really nicely. Is it still on air at the back now, then?
No. No, we changed that out. After the second time, no, third time it blew the airbag out, I changed it over to springs.
Right.
And luckily, the other truck I had a 2-inch lift kit on it.
Okay.
So I just nicked the rear springs off that, replaced them with blocks of wood.
Yeah, it's still available if anyone
wants. Yeah, if you want to buy that, it's good money.
Yeah.
For a total heap of junk.
Rides a little bit firm.
It rides very firm. It starts. It starts. Doesn't drive.
It drives. Just it slips a lot.
Yeah.
Because there's no oil in the gearbox. And if you go too fast, the blocks of wood will fall out. Rear suspension, it will collapse.
Well, that sounds a real peach.
It's an absolute peach.
Listen to this and go, you know what? That is for me.
Yeah.
If you decide,
I'm waiting for another me to come along and buy it off for a lot of money. That's what I'm waiting for.
If you want to, buy this absolute. It sounds just.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Wonderful.
Beautiful.
Oh, you work it. I just remember now when you fell out of love with that truck.
When was it?
You know when Chris Till towed it with the forklift.
Oh yes. Yeah, because actually it was quite neat on the outside, that truck. That was one of the things I liked.
Right.
And then one of the blokes that we work with a little bit got that thing there, the Lindy forklift, stuck.
Everyone crashes that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, he didn't crash it. He just got it stuck because it's only front-wheel drive. It went in a wet patch and he wouldn't get it out.
Right.
So I was like, oh, that's all right. I'll just turn it out of the land drive.
Just go, oh, I'll save you.
Yeah. So I came in all like...
One life limit.
Yeah, one life limit. Put the... strap on it and towed it out.
What
I didn't tell Chris is that it's two different pedals for front and back.
Yeah, on that forklift.
Oh, right.
So you can't press...
It's a forward pedal and a backwards pedal.
Yeah. Yes.
And someone that's not driven a Lindy forklift would freak out and then press any of them and they just shoots in one direction or the other.
My dad used to service them for a living.
Yeah. They were a wonderful forklift when you know how to drive it.
Yes.
If you don't know forklifts, you get one of those.
Yeah.
And it is confusing.
So
Seb, tell once me about
I walked, once I got him out, he decided that, well, he panicked a little bit and decided he'd drive.
Panicked a lot.
Yeah.
He thought he was pressing the brake.
So he thought he was pressing the brake. He pressed the backwards pedal,
flat out,
and drove straight into the front of my disco. And smashed up. The only good thing about it, which was the fact it was very straight and nice.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, I wasn't best pleased with that. Which is why I've now got one of them foam A-frames on the front.
Because
then if anybody does that again, they can...
It'll bounce off.
Well,
presumably. Yeah. It sounds like a vehicle with absolutely no redeeming features. So if you want to buy it, drop us an email, editorial@lrm.co.uk, and I'll pass on your details.
Good man.
What do you want for it?
Oh, about $5,000.
That's what he owes it.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
You could be the lucky owner.
Maybe you could raffle that off as well.
I don't know.
I'd have to pay people to buy the tickets.
Yeah, you can't raffle broken stuff, unfortunately, can you?
Giant.
Hello.
How did you get into Land Rovers then? Because this empire, I suppose, you've built with military vehicles and the incredibly successful YouTube channel, I'm told, started with a Land Rover or Land Rover.
That's how it started. So, I've always liked Land Rovers. Dad didn't, as I explained to you before.
Yes.
Dad was very much going down the German line. You know, we're farmers. We had tractors. Dad would have a Mercedes Unimog. He'd have MB Trax. He had a Mercedes G-Wagon and, like, Audi cars. And then, like I said to you before, in the 90s, the Germans stopped buying British beef, and then he was anti-German. Not for the other reasons.
Yeah, sure.
But for the farms. Let's just leave it at that. So then he got rid of his G-Wagon and his Audi and his... And went all British and bought a Jag and JCB Fast Tracks. And anyway, but all the time I'd say to him, now you've got rid of the G-Wagon, why don't we get a Land Rover? And he was always, no, the junk, Joe, the junk, you know.
Which is not Rosh.
Well,
it's not
in the debate, yeah. But anyway, so I always liked the look of them.
Yeah.
And I think the first one I bought was when I was just starting agricultural college. And it was a little series, short wheelbase. I may as well tape it up now. I don't think I'd get in trouble with it. It was actually taxed. It was registered. It was taxed. And taxation class was agricultural vehicle.
Sure.
So to anyone that doesn't know, it was a tractor.
You say it had a sprayer on it?
No. It was taxed as an agricultural machine / sprayer on the logbook.
Right.
So what I did was put a knapsack sprayer in the back of it, ran it on red diesel, taxed it as a tractor, which was free. No MOT because it's a tractor, which is MOT exempt. Insurance for the year is like less than £100. And then I use that to go to college every day.
Cheap way to get around.
Yeah. Really. There's
many a loophole.
Completely illegal, yeah. if you're honest. But yeah, it was a loophole.
Good job you're not.
But when I bought that, when I bought that, it was in a real state. So found it on eBay in Oldham in Northamptonshire. And anyway, bought it, brought it back. I was saying to you before, like, I took the whole body and tub and cab off in one go. So I got a telegraph pole on the front of my dad's JCB. Oh, no, he didn't have JCB. On the front of the Mapro. And with ratchet straps, lifted the body off the chassis in a wanna, which I thought at the time, I wouldn't have been very old, probably 16 or whatever. And I thought that was great, you know. And the chassis was, as you can imagine, awful, terrible, in a real bad way. So we repaired that with bits of scrap out of the scrap iron and the Sealy Super MIG. I must have had days and days patching it together and buying brick part brakes and suspension, whatever I could afford when I could afford it. So it always had the worst quality of everything.
Say that about brick part. They've probably got an ad running.
I'm not saying at the time that was all I could afford.
The thing about brick part, right, is they supply a part for every budget. So if you want real budget stuff, they'll sell you it. If you want OE stuff, they'll sell you that. Yeah. If you want genuine, they'll sell you that.
Well, at the end of the day, the bits I bought for it were fine. You know, I just couldn't afford like,
yeah,
good armor stuff. Card and sound system in a £100 Land Rover, shall we say.
Of course.
So like, I think I paid 500 quid for it, and then I got it on the road and ran it to college for about a year, I think. And then ended up selling it. So, and then I think I probably sold it for, I can't remember, probably £1,500. So I thought, bloody hell.
Done all right.
I'm hitting big here. You know what I mean? Because you don't value your time as a kid, do you?
No.
So with that money, I then went on and bought something else. And that really, the snowball just got bigger and bigger. And then it allowed me, from buying and selling the odd Land Rover here and there, to eventually get into the armoured vehicles and the military vehicles. So like, it didn't just happen overnight. It took years and years. But fundamentally, it all came from buying Land Rovers. And even now, as you've seen, I still like going back to my old ways. If I see a Land Rover that's for sale that I think there's some, I could see a future in that, I could repair that, move it on, I'll always still be interested if it's cheap.
Of course, you know, everything has to
go back to not valuing my time and spending hours on it repairing it. That's how we sort of here now. I mean, it's fast forwarded a lot of years now. No, I've always had Land Rovers. I think after that series, actually, I had a Range Rover Classic.
Oh, yeah.
And I love Range Rover Classics with the velour seats. And I had one with a 200 TDI in it.
Nice.
So, of course, it had a hard life, you know, because people could afford to drive that. So it was well worn out when I got it. And they have like a, people that will be familiar with it, they have like a viscous couplet. So they're a permanently four-wheel drive, yeah, aren't they? I think it was manual. Yeah, it was manual. Anyway.
The Boyd Warner transfer box.
That's it. We used to love it at college. Like, it was so comfortable. You know, it wasn't particularly fast. We'd obviously done the TDI remap with the spanner and the screwdriver, so it smoked well and went all right, you know what I mean? And I can't remember, we were going to the cinema one night. We must have had it full of those college mates, absolutely full of us. We were going round this roundabout, and we kept going round and trying to get it on two wheels, as you do. And we were going round and round, and then all of a sudden there was a mighty bang, and we was went from like doing 20 mile an hour around the roundabout to actually we're all through the windscreen, you know, okay, stopped instantly. And I thought, oh dear, what's happened?
Heavens.
Everyone like scraped their faces off the back of the seats and the windows. I got out and there was just gears and silver all around this roundabout. It shot the planetary gears out the rear diff all over the place. So I just put my hand in this massive hole. It like blew it open like a shell had gone through it. Put my hand in, picked out all the bits and pieces, chucked them in the boot and off we went. Or wow. Front axle. And I probably drove it like that for several months. And then again, of course, I got no money at the time. So I think I hammered the rear casing back in and welded it up really badly and found a diff out of something else, slapped that in it, and it was all right for a period of time. But I ran it that long with no prop on. What I'd forgot about is, you know, the rear drum is held on with like a cow screw. That's only really for fitting it. But of course, when you take the rear prop shaft off, that's relying on it for everything. So I've been driving around for a couple of weeks with no diff in it, just a hollow casing and obviously no rear props. And I pulled into the shop near college, I think it was Sainsbury's or whatever, I can't remember, it doesn't matter. And I came into the car park and I just remember hearing this round thing shot off from underneath me, went up the car park and smashed into someone's car, and it was a handbrake drum. So I did the honourable thing of, dear, that wasn't me. Backed up and went somewhere else. I never picked up the brake shoe. I don't know what happened to that, but I didn't stop.
They do fly well when they come
off. They're heavy, aren't they?
I was on road test with my mentor. I was an apprentice at the dealership, and we were doing the same thing. We were testing a Defender for a vibration.
Yeah.
And we took the back prop off that. Not,
oh, you'd never find a vibration on a Defender. That's not.
Well, you know, they're such refined vehicles, but going down the road, and it was harvest time, this farm going up and down, harvesting his weed side of the road, and the drum came off, went in the field. We saw it leave underneath the Land Rover, and we thought, we'd better get back sharpish, because if that combine takes that brake drum,
it's going to wreck it.
We're going to be in trouble. He was not happy, but we did find it eventually. But yeah, if you're testing for always remember to take the brake drum off, but then remember that you've got no handbrake.
Yeah, yeah. Or just repair it before you use it. Yeah. That's the thing with Land Rovers. It's amazing just how far you can push into the ragged edge and carry on using them. I mean, Jack does it on a daily basis.
Yeah. As he's demonstrated.
Yeah. A Land Rover isn't truly broken until it literally will not move.
Yeah, until it won't move under its own power. That's broke.
So, funny you should say that, Joe. We were supposed to have a certain white Defender 110 on
our
photo
606 in it
today. But and we did achieve photographing it, but unfortunately not at the place where we were going to photograph it originally because of yet another driveline-related failure.
Yeah.
So this tell us a little bit more driver-related.
Yeah. So basically, that Land Rover I bought from Witham Specialist Vehicle was a non-runner. We'd done some bits for them, and I saw this in their yard. I thought, I've always liked those utilities. I've had a number of those Defender utilities, X-Power services, because they're actually very well maintained as a rule. This one was a bad example. But they were usually very well maintained, extra thick chassis, upgraded suspension. Generally, if you needed stuff like an axle or whatever, it was always done. So yeah, they tend to drive nice. So I saw this one, and I always end up going back to them. And I made a deal on it anyway. Got it back and got it going. We had trouble with the immobiliser because it had been parked up for so long. Anyway, I worked out, it was making a bit of a weird noise when I got it going. I thought, oh, it sounds a bit queer. But anyway, been off the road for a while. And I took it to Antumen today for a MOT. And of course he goes, I can't MOT that because it's a bigger category.
Right, yeah, yeah. Class 7 or
yeah, whatever it is. Yeah. He says, I've had a look at the turbo and it's no more. So I thought it was making a bit of a weird noise. On the way there, we were going along, and it was going well, and then it made a weird whistling noise. Then all of a sudden, we got no power at all.
Okay.
And the engine warning light came on. So there were problems. So anyway, bought a new turbo on it, put a new turbo on it, and ran it around, got it MOT'd, and drove it all the way to France.
No, you didn't.
No,
you drove it halfway to France.
Now, this is quite funny. So before we went, we thought, it's going a long way. We ought to check the brakes. And Ant said, the brakes are down, but he said it will make it to France. What I should have done is listen to Ant.
Just driven it.
And just took it with the original brakes. What I thought was, no, we've got time. Let's do the brakes. Anyway, I worked very well at the time. I'm not going to use that as an excuse. So Jack kindly took on the job of sorting the brakes.
Yeah,
so,
well,
as everyone knows, to do the brakes on a Land Rover, you have to take the hub off, you have to take the wheel bearings to bits. I don't know what Jack did, but I don't
think...
I don't think the wheel bearing went together with any grease.
No, basically, what I did is I was doing two things at once and I forgot to reapply new grease to said bearings.
Right.
Slapped it all back together. I had done four, so I did three right.
Okay.
In my defence. Mm. It was only the last one that I didn't do right. And yeah, then he got halfway to France and that had got a bit warm, as it would do with no grease.
Got you.
And it basically melted the end off the
hub. We're about 700 mile inland into France and going flat out down the motorway, well, flat out, doing 70 miles.
Yeah, of course.
This is TDI at this point. It was still a TDI at this moment in time. And anyway, we're going along and all of a sudden there was this mighty bat. And I thought, that's weird. And the RPM went right up to like a million. You know, I thought,
yeah, sure.
What's happened here? Of course, the missus instantly starts panicking, like, you know, the world's going to end. And I thought, not to matter, I'll just slap it in transfer box. You don't want to do that at 70 mile an hour. It didn't like that.
No.
So there was another massive crash as it went into transfer.
Not the only idiot. It's good to hear.
As you locked the diff at 70.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was revving at about 9 million RPM.
You'll get that for those big jobs.
Yeah. There'll be people literally swearing at this. And anyway, so just gently smashed it into transfer, into four-wheel drive. And we went on until we got to a bit of a pull-in. And got out, and I thought, oh, I wonder what's happened. I thought, oh, where's the prop shaft come off or something? And anyway, looking around, I couldn't see anything wrong with it. I stood at the back, thought, why does the rear wheel look like something out of an Olympic wheelchair? Do you know what I mean? The angle, the camber on the rear wheel. So I was, there's something wrong there. So under closer inspection, what happened is... The wheel bearing must have failed... I reckon 200 miles ago.
Right. No sign of any noise up to this.
It'd been clunking, but when you're doing a constant 70 mile an hour, you know, it only clunks when you're like...
Okay. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it wasn't that noticeable, but
Christ.
What had happened is the wheel bearing had failed a long time ago, and it was actually, the only thing holding the wheel on was a mixture of the brake caliper and the shaft.
Right.
The drive shaft, the half shaft. And... the half shaft had obviously had all the weight of the wheel pushing up at the top of the axle casing. And it just basically just milled itself away. It milled itself away, got blue hot, and then just snapped. And then, of course, that's why I lost drive. So we thought, well, that's ungood in France on a Friday afternoon. So I thought, well, we'll have a go at mending it. I mean, how bad can it be? And, of course, then when I jacked it up, took the wheel off, I realised that there was nothing left of the wheel bearing. Like, literally, you couldn't do anything with it.
That's what heat does to them.
So I thought, oh, this isn't ideal. Of course, the missus is really screaming at this point because you're at the side of the motorway in France. Everyone's talking gibberish. You can't understand the thing anyone's saying.
I believe they call it French, Joe.
Yeah.
They're talking gibberish.
Surrender monkey language.
And anyway, I thought, right, well, it's no good here. It's pretty dangerous here at the side of the road, so... carried on the front axle, knowing that the back wheel isn't good, because I thought, we're going to get nicked by the police in a minute for doing like 20 mile an hour down the motorway on the hard shoulder. But when we get off the motorway, I thought, right, start typing in French, where's the nearest motor factors, like in a vehicle part place.
Ouai-le-Halfords.
Yeah.
But because it was after 3 o'clock, they're all closed. They don't do work.
I thought, there must be someone here that have a wheel bearing. There's got to be a Land Rover wheel bearing. Anyway, we were hours trying to find somewhere, and eventually the Land Rover got to the point where it literally wouldn't go any further. Like, we'd milled everything that much that the brake caliper was the only thing holding it on, and it half sawn through the brake caliper, and actually like friction welded the disc to the wheel. So we were just going along with like the rear wheel go, and I'd borrowed a set of wheels off me mate, a twisted set of wheels with BS. So I thought, I can't flat spot his wheels. That's not cool. So we had to dump it outside a Mercedes.
That's where you went wrong. I had a flat spot. But
just carried off the camper. So I had to just dump it outside this Mercedes lorry dealership. And anyway, I rang for a taxi, which is hard work when you can't understand a thing. And actually, he was a real nice chap. He could sort of speak pidgin English, which was good. So I was speaking pidgin French to him. And he
met
was
in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, speaking pidgin. And I kept getting like the you know, translate up and... It must have just been saying the most bizarre things to him. But he sort of understood what he was saying. Anyway, we were going to Teens. We were trying to get there to go skiing, you see. I thought, we'll take the Land Rover. It'd be fun on the mountains. But we never even got to the mountains. So I ended up having to take this poor chap at about 7 o'clock at night in this, I can't remember, little Mercedes car.
206.
Took us all the way to Teens. So I think we arrived at like 2 in the morning. And the bill for the taxi was like... I think it was like over €1,000.
Really?
And the missus was like, what are we going to do about the Land Rover? I was like, well, we're going to leave it.
Yeah.
And she's like, but what was this? Someone sees it. I was like, we're in France. People don't steal things, you know.
And she was like, you want to try, you can't.
She was like freaking out. I was like, literally, I couldn't care less. If they can move it, they can have it. You know what I mean? If they're that desperate that they want it, they better have it. So I rang my friend that runs a recovery business, rang Dave Crouch and just said, a slight breakdown, Dave. It's like, all right, Joe, where are you? So, 700 miles inland in France. And he goes, oh, f***ing it. Anyway, he said, don't worry, mate. Just leave the keys under the wheel. I'll send someone out for it. So we just literally abandoned the Land Rover and went off, you know, in this very expensive taxi and carried on with our holiday. The whole time, Mrs. was worrying, like, Albert, well, you know, once if Land Rover gets nicked, I said, well, that would only be a good thing, wouldn't it?
Well,
but yeah. Anyway, didn't get nicked. Crouch has recovered it. And Seb had to drive all the way out in one day, drove all the way out, stayed the night at this cabin, this log cabin we were in, and then drove us all the way back home the next day in his BMW. And, you know, it made it. There was no wheel bearing trouble.
Funny that.
I did offer to do the brakes before he left, but he turned me down.
We must have used half the amount of gasol or whatever they call diesel in France that we use in the Land Rover. But yeah, so that was eventful. And anyway, we thought, well, I did enjoy it. It's daft as it sounds. Like there's an element of like it's
things going wrong. Well,
it's not things going wrong. It's an event going somewhere in the Land Rover. Mm. Like going into another country with a Land Rover that isn't the best in the world. You know. Was quite exciting.
And has been mended by an idiot.
It was fun, you know. So we thought, well, we're going to get it back. We'll get it fixed. And at some point, we'll try and do another road trip in it. So we did mend the wheel bearing and all that. We put Ashcroft's hardened shafts in it. We thought, while we're at it, we may as well make it a bit better.
Because that'll last longer when they're milling themselves.
I was going to say.
When it fails, we've got Ashcroft's shafts to just get us another 200.
They would have got you to the
you'd have saved £300 on the tax.
Yeah, you don't need wheel bearings. Just get some Ashcroft's heavy-duty shafts in the back and just send it. But, so we thought, we'll get it a bit better as we go. And anyway, it then... that's what we did. We used it to recover some Scammel Pioneers out of a shed. There was these old Scammels that had been stood in a shed for years. And we thought, the Land Rover will pull that out. So I got on the Land Rover. And the Scammel must have weighed, I don't know, 8 ton.
Yeah.
The Land Rover weighing about 2. So I was really, really delicate. Giving it the super snatch and super dump. We eventually... somehow didn't smash the cross member off the Land Rover. We managed to drag this lorry out. And then we'd gone off a Williams trailer with us where we got like basically the contents of a scammeling kit form in the back. So we were towing this trailer that was clearly legal.
Yes, 100% white.
And that was quite a way away, weren't it?
That was Oxfordshire.
Yeah.
Yeah, like south.
A long way. So of course I drove at the speed limit all the way home in the Land Rover because... Gareth had tuned it, so it actually went really well. That I was
with a
tune, the 2.2.
They are.
I hate to say it. Actually, I enjoyed it. I loved it. I loved the engine when it worked. But after that journey, things started to happen. You know, the engine didn't like the snatching of the Scammel. It didn't like dragging several
three times, and a half
five,
ten.
Five
yeah
of,
three and a half to five
of very valuable scramble parts home. And literally as we got home, I parked it around there and it started making that noise again, you know, the noise that the turbo's not well.
Oh right, okay.
And I thought, oh no, what's happened here? Anyway, so we just ignored it, and so we just carried on using it, and it just started to like lose power and lose power. And I did check the turbo thing, oh, the turbo must be failing, but it wasn't. So I thought, this is weird. Anyway, started it one morning, it was quite cold and it was sounding particularly not good. And anyway, I thought, I'll let it just warm up. And I just went back inside on the toilet, and I heard like the Land Rover went like, it made a screech and it turned itself off. I was like, oh dear. And what happened, it seized up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, so I thought, oh, I'm going to have to do something about that now. It's now undrivable. So brought it in here, took the sump off. Well, I took the engine out, took, well, Scott.
No. What you did first was try and start the seized engine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Burn the start motor out and set the whole thing on fire.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've tried running it on easy start until it wouldn't run any further. I forgot about that. Yeah, and then putting as many jump packs as possible on it so it just turned it over when it was really seized up.
Just to give the start
And then,
really,
yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Then the start motor caught fire, and then I just sort of left it burning for 5-10 minutes. And then, eventually, a friend of mine, Scott Nothing To Do With You, who runs a YouTube channel, he sort of introduced me into the OM606.
Mm.
So when we sold a tank to Whistling Diesel.
Yes.
And Scott came down at that time in his OM606 Defender.
Right.
And we all had a go in it, including Whistling Diesel. And in fairness, like when you've never been near one, it was amazing. Like the power, it was just incredible. It was like, oh my God, that was the most fun in a Land Rover. And it sounded brilliant. So he sort of got me interested. I thought, well, Landra, the engine in this is scrap, so I'm going to have to change it. So I said, I rang Scott and said, what are you thinking? I'd like to put a 606 in like yours. I said, well, I've got just the thing for you. He'd got an engine that'd been sat outside under a tarpaulin, under a gutter, in a canal.
Beautiful.
And he said, I'll sell you that. So I ended up buying his spare engine, which was sight unseen, and he bought it off Facebook Marketplace, sight unseen. So none of us actually knew if there was anything good about it at all, but it turned out to be all right. Cheers. And so Scott took the TDCI out.
Super.
And in fairness, it was Scott that said, oh, well, to be honest, to make this an easier build, if you check out Diesel Pump UK, he basically does a whole kit to, like, you know, make the bell housing fit the original gearbox. So I wanted the original gearbox and I like the inside of the TDCI. So he said, you'd be better to just ring Diesel Pump UK and just say, look, we want the mounts, we want the clutch kit, you know, everything to just make it easier so he hasn't got to make everything. So that's when I rang up Diesel Pump UK and then obviously met Luke.
Tried to use his fame to get himself some free
stuff.
Did he?
Well, no, not really. Like,
don't you know who I am? No. Is there a bit of that?
Oh, yeah, loads of that.
No,
I've got a YouTube channel.
When I rang, I actually got through to, I think, Luke's missus at the time that answered the phone. And I was explaining what was going on, you know, what my idea was. And I said, oh, I've had a slight bit of trouble with my Land Rover engine and it caught fire. It was a little bit. She's like, didn't I see that on TikTok? I was like, maybe. And anyway, she said, oh, Luke's just out at the minute, but I'll get him to ring you back. And of course he did. And I'd never met him before, but on the phone, we had a good laugh. You know, I could instantly get on with him. I said, look, well, we've had a bit of trouble. I'm thinking about making a bit of a video about it. I can see that you clearly do all the bits. I've been recommended that you're the guy to do it, sort of thing, to sell the parts. So basically, I've no idea what we're doing. We have a block. Can you sell me whatever we need to, you know, make it fit the Land Rover? So he's like, well, we'll work something out. And anyway, he basically said, look, he does all the conversion kits for pretty much every other Land Rover, and he just hadn't quite finished all the little nitty-gritty bits of the TDCI. So he said, actually, it will be a good thing for me to sort of to revise a few things. And just finish the kit for the TDCI, so then he'll have the whole range. And I said, well, I'm in no hurry for it. So we worked out a plan and a deal, and we said, like, film as much as you like, because, you know, it'd be quite an interesting build. And of course, like, I was going to be happy with like a knackered engine, like
yeah.
in sort of any old fashion. And like, I'd not met Luke at that time.
Right.
Like,
okay.
The word bodge, it's not a word that he understands.
It doesn't do that. No.
When I went and looked around his workshop, it's more like a laboratory, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, yes. It's like everything is perfect. Like, yeah, he's such a precision man.
Couldn't be more opposite to how we were.
Yeah, yeah. But he's a proper piss taker. Like, he'll talk with deadpan face, and you think he's being serious, but he's just taking piss out of it. You know? And I've got a lot of time for that. So, of course, but he is, when it comes to work, he is like proper.
Yeah.
It's 100%, you know, 110%. And I did say to him, I said, look, it doesn't need to be that great because, you know, we're very agricultural.
We're only going to break it.
And it's like, yeah, but I want it to be right. And so, of course, he said, well, if you don't mind, I'd like to fit the engine and then I can sort of make pipe work and sort radiators out to make a nicer kit to then sell for other people, sort of thing. So that's sort of what we did. So, and the plan was Luke was going to, you know, get the engine running and then we were going to go and do a video with Twisted Automotive. So I said to Luke, well, I've sort of got a date booked in with Twisted for this date. So if you could just, you know, drop whatever you're doing and get the Land Rover fixed for this date, that'd be great. So in 3 weeks, pretty well, he had pretty much, you know, took all the engine to bits. He wanted to rebuild the engine. I said, oh, there's no point. Like, it doesn't need it. But he took the cylinder head off, redid the valves. He did loads for it. He wanted to take...
Love Land Rovers? Then you'll love Land Rover Monthly, the world's best-selling Land Rover magazine. Packed with adventures, expert tips, restorations, buying guides, and loads more. For the best deals, subscribe today at landrovermonthly.co.uk and never miss an issue.
Just to pause there a second, the engine in question isn't the one you bought off your mate Scott, is it?
It is, yeah, yeah. That did 9 million RPM that ran away.
Is it really? Yeah. That's what I was going to ask you.
That must be the most seen OM606 engine in the world.
It is amazing.
That video did a lot of views.
Yeah, I'm not surprised because, it ran flat out on its own.
What was more amazing, I think everyone could agree, is how on earth did Scott, with his little skeleton arms, manage to, like, suffocate the engine? Because it has so many ports on a 606, and there's so many parts you can't. It's so hard to block.
I'm absolutely amazed he managed to stalk that without...
I was waiting for it to blow up in his face.
Honestly, or without ripping chunks out of his arms. Because if you've ever stalled a diesel with anything, it's scary, and they pull a lot of air. So that's the same engine?
It's the same engine, So, of course, Luke had got high expectations for this engine.
Right.
And he kept saying, look, I really think we probably ought to... I was like, nah, it'll be sound, mate. It'll be fine. So, of course, Luke ignored everything I said, quite rightly. And he said, look, I've took the sump off. I've had a look at the shells. He said, believe it or not, they're fine. He said, I can't believe it myself, but I'm actually happy. Really, if we'd have had more time, which in fairness, in Heinz Bean's sight, there was no real rush. We could have. It didn't make any difference. So I think in time... I will take it back to Luke. Well, he won't want to do it, but I will go and I'll rephrase that. I will buy Luke's upgraded pistons and rod kit because he does all that sort of stuff and just go through it because she can be a little bit smoky in the mornings.
Right.
But the consideration really, it was just an engine, unknown engine.
The only thing we knew about it is it could do 9,000 RPM.
Yeah, it did 9,000 RPM.
The Honda... VTEC of diesel
making power. It was non-turbo at that point. It was still making serious power. Anyway, so yeah, Luke went all through it, and he did all the top because he always says that, you know, gaskets that he always gets, like the genuine Mercedes gaskets are fast. It's so cheap, just do it right the first time. And in fairness to him, as you saw, I've used that Land Rover. I've been abusive with it only a little bit. But the engine's immaculate, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've used it a lot. It's done lots of miles. I've been hard on it because Luke said be hard on it. So, I mean, he really didn't have to twist my arm there. And it's still, you could eat your dinner off the engine, really. Yeah, it's still...
It is very...
He's done a mint job of that. But, like, it was such a change. So, like, I dropped off with Luke with no engine in it. And then driving it out of his workshop, it seemed so bizarre. Although it was the same, you know, when you're so used to a vehicle, you're like, you know your Land Rover, you get in it, you know the noises, you know how the steering feels, you know how the throttle feels, the clutch, everything. And when you get in it, and it's like, there's such a massive difference. Although
nothing was really the same apart,
feel visually.
Yeah.
This is the thing I said to Lucas. So, look, I don't want it to be one of those conversions where you've got switches hanging from the dashboard where you've drilled holes in. So I don't. I hate that. I hate to see it. I want it to look as boring as it sounds. Oh, yeah.
Like nobody's touched it.
And he said, yeah, no problem. He said, to be honest, that's how he prefers stuff like that anyway. So, like, you know, he made all the RPM gauge work properly and the speeder and everything works as it should. So visually, I mean, it's in the driver's seat and it's the same as it was. But then, like, driving it, like, I know the clutch was a lot heavier because it's got a Sachs Racing clutch in it. So that was significantly heavy to press. But, like, the revs, when you're not used to, like, an OM engine, it's just like you're revving it halfway, you think, bloody hell, it's quick. And it's like, you're not even revving it.
Yeah.
It'll do the same again. And then you just boot it and it's just like, it just keeps revving and revving and revving. You think, Jesus Christ, you know, like, unbelievable. So, like, because I remember how it went before. And in fairness, after Gareth had done the remap and all the 2.0, it went well.
Yeah.
You know, as far as Land Rovers went, it went bloody well with a 2.2. Mm. Well, after it got the 606 in, it would have made it look like it didn't have an engine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was the difference. And, you know, the sound, like, a lot of engines, they sound nice at a certain RPM, whereas that just sounds insane. The higher it's at revving, it doesn't sound worse. It just sounds absolutely mental. You know, it's a really cool sound. And outside, even, like when it's being booted away, it just sounds, you know, phenomenal, really.
It's halfway between a tractor and a dragster.
You just don't expect that sort of thing from a diesel.
A lot of people compare the OM to a petrol, like a B25 or a six-cylinder turbo petrol because of their characteristics. Obviously, they've got a lot more torque. They're a diesel.
Mm. But
the way they rev, they're so responsive.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, and like, you know, you're in fourth gear and you're doing like 100 mile an hour. It's like, I've still got two more gears. Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to just... If you want to drive it like a hooligan, it will go like a hooligan.
Did you keep standard transfer box gearing in it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, of course, the Land Rover previous to all of this conversions and things had done, I think it's done 170,000 miles. So, like, the gear train, the driveline's fairly worn.
A bit tired.
It had always been making this clonking anyway. You know, this clonking from the gearbox. And I said to Luke, I said, what's that clonking? He said, oh, it'll develop. It'll just develop faster with the OM606 in it. And that's really how I like things to go. I say it'll be apparent what's wrong with it when something happens.
You like the fault to shout at you.
Yeah. You want it to be clear. Don't the fault you don't want to get in there and go, well, what was the problem? You go, that was the problem.
So, ran it about for a fair little while. And funnily enough, Rishi, you got into contact with me and said, yeah, come down and we'll get the Land Rovers together. And of course, me and Seb went off to drop some parts off with it. And being a X-Power Services Land Rover, the rear tailgate opens up and underneath, you're supposed to have two pull-out drawers.
Right.
But Western Power, every time that they sell one, they pull the pull-out drawers out and put it in the new ones, you see. So you don't often get it with the pull-out drawers because they can't be asked to pay someone 2p to make an unset drawer. So my one's drawerless. And we were taking all this military swag to a friend of ours to sell it for peanuts. And it was just like intercom boxes. Anyway, we got the whole back of it full. And we thought, oh, we're going to have to slide some bits in the... We try not to put stuff in there because it's annoying.
Right.
Because you put stuff under there, you slam the brakes on, and it rattles to the bulkhead in the truck to a place where you can't reach.
Got it.
So you have to sort of like try and squeeze yourself and then slide under the floorboards and reach right up to the back of the bulkhead, which is incredibly
shoulders can do.
So we thought, oh, bloody hell, you know, there's one box left in it. We're unloading it. And it's rattled its way right up to the bulkhead. So I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll go forward, rev it flat out, and go backwards and slam the brakes on it. It'll shoot out the back door, you know. So I revved it flat out, dumped the clutch a little bit hard, and what happened, it was just smashed the gearbox.
it's an impressive failure. We looked at the failed part earlier, and I've I've never seen before.
No.
Yeah,
and it is clear what's wrong, though.
Yeah, it was obvious, wasn't it? As Luke said, it will develop.
I can't fault your diagnostic process, to be honest.
And to be sure that it was failing, what we did was, when I'd snapped it and it was going like... I put it in top gear and revved it flat out for 10 minutes until the noise went away. So it just milled out what was gripping,
So I can
I
see
want it to be very obvious that it was broken.
The pattern developing here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean
animals.
I wasn't going to say it, but it's in the process of getting fixed, isn't it?
Yeah, and like that, you know, those shafts. So it was the shaft that goes from the gearbox to transfer box.
Yeah,
everyone knows on those 2.2s a week, and we've upgraded it to LOF's upgraded shaft version. So if you're listening, Luke, we will be testing that out to the max.
Next time Joe leaves a box and it slides
to
the bolt.
He'll be sweating now, won't he? Be like,
yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, it's because he uses a one-piece shaft, doesn't he? I think I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Well,
we'll be testing that out.
There you go. See how it does. But, yeah, we still managed to achieve what we needed to achieve today. Very, very happy about that. And it's been great to have a look around your numerous workshops and see what you've been up to. Let's talk a little bit about what you guys actually do, because I'm sure there'll be some listeners that aren't completely familiar with your, like I say, your, so well, I suppose your...
What we do day to day, we run a YouTube channel, which sounds a bit cringe, doesn't it? But basically what we do is we restore military vehicles, mainly tanks and lorries, of all eras, really. You tend to find that Second World War vehicles are very expensive.
Right, okay.
We can't afford them.
Yeah, we've not broke into
it. So, you know, it's a one step at a time sort of thing. So we're very much, we like the post-war stuff. So we're working on Centurions, Chieftains. We've got T-34. We've got various things. And, you know, we'll basically film the process of, you know, finding it abandoned. We like to find them that have been parked up for years, maybe a gate guard, and then strip them to bits, try and get them going, and then test them out to make sure they're mechanically sound. Then we'll bring them in the workshop, strip them down, paint them, weld up any exterior, make them pretty, and then take them to shows and display them for the public, and then have a little play, drive around. And yeah, so we've usually got, I mean, how many projects have we got going on at the minute?
Don't know, you did it.
We've got probably at any one time, we've probably got 50, 60. Two or three main battle tank projects.
Right.
In fairly major steps of restoration.
Three.
That's just in this room.
Yeah. So that's in this workshop. We've got about five things on the go.
Yeah.
At the minute.
Right.
I bet it's more than that.
Well, it
five,
it's
tanks.
Five tanks. Yeah. And then we've got.
We do all of the sorts.
He's on a camper van made.
Oh, I had a tour of that.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Really nice.
We've got a couple of lorries as well.
Yeah.
Bits and bobs like that. We've got a little dingo to have a mess around at. So, yeah, we've got a fair few projects, but the big ones we class as, like, the tank stuff that are big projects. We've got about five of those on the go at one time.
And all we really do is just film us working on it. Most of the time we're just taking the piss out of each other.
I was going to say, I think a lot of the draw really is it's so relatable. It's just mates trying to
Yeah. And we try and stick to that because it works for us.
Yeah.
And we don't have to put it on.
No. Like,
we find a lot of people... There's similar things. It's all very forced.
Yeah.
Whereas with us, it's not. We're very, well, I'm very sarcastic as is.
Are you?
Yeah, believe me or not.
They just got you there.
Seb works fairly well because he's just a very good target. It's very easy to take the piss out of Joe as well. And then we all kind of work together in that situation. It just so happens that some of us have a bit of knowledge on how to mend stuff as well.
Yeah, but we like to...
Just not wheelbarrows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, we never profess to be professional anyway. So we like to give the audience the illusion, which isn't difficult, that we are complete morons. So they'll be screaming at the telly going, oh, these idiots taking this engine out of the tank, doing it all wrong.
Yeah.
Well, in some cases we are, but generally, when it comes to when you know there's a fault, is like we are quite interested in the mechanics of how stuff works.
Sure,
we're all quite dedicated to like not being beaten by things. So no matter what it is, no matter how difficult it is,
some of us more than others.
Keep going at it until we, you know, because the only way you can learn for anything is keep failing. Jack will throw a bar at the...
I was going to say, Jack's...
You know, compassion runs high at times.
Being defeated by a remote locking fire.
Yeah, I reckon we... I didn't get beat. It got beat.
Our biggest... Oh, you're calling the police.
Oh, no. I don't want to do that.
Oh, yes. What did you say at the start? Put your phones on silent.
I'm really sorry. It was in the camping chair.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, yeah.
Hank's ringing the police.
Call your mum.
I sabotaged my own podcast.
Yeah. And... Yeah, I think our biggest expense with tools is actually torches. We tend to, I don't know why, but as
we've all got vendettas against torches.
A bit of a consumable item.
Especially magnetic torches.
Oh, really?
They always choose the wrong moment to drop on your head.
Yeah, and they do. They drop on your head, or they fall off, and then they blind you. Yeah. That is the most infuriating thing in the world. Yeah.
So they quite often get smashed.
Right.
Yeah. It was quite funny. When we were doing a restoration on actually the world's biggest gun tank in the world for the Tank Museum at Bobbington.
Tell you what, and, that was a really good bit of plug-in. That was well done.
That was nice.
That was lovely. And, seamless.
Yeah. Well, no one will notice what we did there. And anyway,
it's fine. Plug away.
The funny thing was, though, the reason I say that is we were working on the hull at the time. We ain't got the turret connected. And we got one of the curators of the museum coming to see how we're getting on. So I was showing him that, just like, oh, we're just working on it at the minute. Jack was in the hold. And I was like, it's just in the workshop here, so just open that door where you've come through. And I was just like, yeah, so this is it. And all you heard was Jack. And then you just saw a bar hit this roller shutter door, which made the loudest noise in the world, and then flung off and hit something else. And I was like, that's Jack. Just got the curator of Jack Museum going, just throwing tools out of the... tank, but eventually Jack did calm down. But no, it's there's a lot of things that people don't see on camera. It is, people often say, which makes us laugh. They go, oh, you've got the best job in the world. And it's just like, it's very much not, because when you're here, we will do a video and it tends to be sort of 15 to 20 minutes long. So whatever you think you've seen in that video, you've only had to endure 20 minutes of it. The reality of that is probably took us over a week, or if not 2 weeks, to get to where we are in that stage.
Yeah.
And like, things that people forget about, working on tanks in the winter, a tank is like a 40-ton armoured hull. And in the wintertime, what that does is suck all the freezing cold weather and just put it in one thing, and you're kneeling it.
Yeah.
That isn't cool. It's freezing cold, and then you're working with spanners that are bigger than normal spanners, which are freezing cold.
Sure.
And then you tend to slip and smack your fingers on absolutely everything.
Yep.
And then in the summer, it's the opposite. It's boiling hot.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? They're never nice to work on.
One thing you mentioned, like, obviously the videos are only 15, 20 minutes long, and it's like a highlight. You're not going to show
that highlight reel, yeah.
Yeah, of
the same job.
We try and
show what we deem as half interest.
The thing I have the utmost admiration for you guys is when you get a tank in that needs, like, external restoration and you needle gun the whole thing, prime it, paint it. How much patience you must have.
You see, I'm quite good at that.
Really?
What I do is I take my brain out and I plonk it on the side.
Right.
And then I go needle gunning.
Fair, your brain is often on the side.
Well, it's often on the side, yeah.
But it's often left at home, actually. Sure, not even in the room.
Yeah. Having needle gunned a few bits of chassis.
Yeah, it's an awful job, but for some reason, I don't seem to mind it too much.
Yeah, Jack puts his AirPods in and then listens to Game of Thrones or whatever.
I have my audio books in.
Oh, okay.
So I'll be listening to Game of Thrones or... 50 Shades of Grey or whatever it is. And
so
clonking away. I'm not going to say that, though.
It could take...
Clonking away.
That's an image, isn't it? That's a mental image. So it could take Jack anywhere between 3 to 4 weeks to completely needle gun just the hull of a main battle tank. Yeah. So that's going all around the wheel stations.
Yeah.
Probably not even the turret. It takes a serious amount of time.
Yeah. It's 4 weeks to do a whole thing.
Really?
And then the other thing that people probably don't realise is, like we said about the hulls tend to absorb. So when it's particularly damp one day, the hull actually starts sweating.
Yes.
It absorbs the water terrible. So prior to painting, once we've needle gunned, wire wheeled the death out of it. Anyone that's done any wire wheeling will know how dangerous wire wheeling is. Jack is banned from wire wheeling because...
No, I'm not banned. I've banned myself.
Because I caught all the grind in my hands.
Yeah, it didn't work well. It caught on something, bounced out my hands.
Right.
And you know when you drop something, your automatic
go to pick
do is to catch it.
Yeah.
So I tried to catch it. It bounced off my arm and then caught in my T-shirt. And the T-shirt managed to wrap it up, but it did cut me to ribbons. So I don't do wire wheeling anymore because I fucking hate them.
another swear word to
it. Sorry, yeah.
I might just put a disclaimer at the beginning and say there's a bit of swearing in this. Just don't listen to it in front.
It's not meant nastily. Use it as vocabulary. Yeah. They're very good describing words.
They are. Yeah. I agree.
I've not used the big one yet. The C.
I was going to say you have been good in that respect. Can we keep it?
To be honest, I don't use that one that often.
Okay.
The F word's the one I use a lot.
That's
a very good describing word.
He'll use the F word where most people go
yeah. Because I hate saying as well because it makes you look gormless as hell.
I completely agree. I do that all the time.
Yeah,
so both on.
It's all right.
Yeah.
But so yeah, like the process of doing them up does take an incredible amount.
Yeah, it's a long time.
And
it's not
there's only so much needle going you can show someone on a video where they just fall asleep. So annoyingly, the thing that takes the longest, you can only show for the least amount of time.
Yeah, sure.
Which does take away from the effort that goes involved. And a lot of people go, oh, why don't you sandblast them? Which is a very common thing we get asked. Yeah. And the reason for that is you don't want to really sandblast a tank unless you take everything out of the hole. So the turret off, the turret ring off, all the internals, because you can never get the blast out of the turret ring. You know, you've always got the element of the grit in there.
Yeah.
And when you then go to paint, you think you've got it all blown off nicely, and you go to paint, and as you paint, it blows a load of sand all down the side, and you've got to redo it again. So it takes longer. So unless we're doing a full, complete nut and bolt strip down, but a nut and bolt strip down on a taint, if you think it'd take a year to do a Land Rover nut and bolt, it'd take 10 to do it.
Yeah.
To do a tank, if you were doing everything. And that's probably with a few people.
Yeah.
But of course, we can't spend that amount of time. So we're trying to do the most we can in the shortest amount of time. So we are working every single day, pretty much.
Yeah.
Finding the right parts for your Land Rover or Range Rover shouldn't be an off-road challenge. At bnh4x4.com, we've built a smarter way to get you back on track. Our new website is now live. The simple, fast, and reliable way to find the parts and accessories you need. Supplying quality parts for Defender 1983 to 2016, Discovery 1, 2, 3, and 4, Range Rover Sport 2005 to 2013, with Range Rover P38A and L322 coming soon. All parts are backed by expert knowledge, quick delivery, and a 2-year quality guarantee. Visit bmh4x4.com. Built by enthusiasts for enthusiasts.
When we did that restoration for the museum, that I won't say because you'll say that I'm calling them out. you know, we were working on that we did that in under a year, and we worked
did that
on
in
our,
6 months.
Yeah,
6 months.
It should have been a year.
It should have been a 4-year project.
Not mentioning anyone's name. They messed around with the paintwork.
Well, made us
But so we had to try and do, you know, everything we could in such a short amount of time, to the point where we were literally painting it as it went on the lorry to take it to the show.
Wow.
Where it was debuting in front of like 20,000 people.
Yeah.
And we'd never driven it before. You know what I mean? Yeah. This thing, when you build a tank up that's not been ran for years, you need to do some trial runs. So, you know, that was a Centurion chassis. Like, so the engine, you need to test it because they're a 27 litre petrol, basically out of a Spitfire. It's a Rolls-Royce Meteor in them.
Right.
And they have carburetors, and of course carburetors can give trouble. They have twin magnetos. Anyone knows anything about magnetos? They can give trouble. Everything you can think about can give trouble, but when they're running nice, they're brilliant.
Yeah.
But what you don't want to do is take an untested vehicle and then showcase it in front of 20,000 people that have also helped pay the sponsor for the build of it. So, of course, we took this vehicle thinking we've painted it on the way down. That night we went to unload it at the museum and it would start.
Great.
So what had happened is on the journey from... So the all we did with the vehicle, we drove it from at this workshop here, we drove it on the lorry. That was it. That's the only bit of testing we did. So we had to try and like set the steering brakes, because of course they're not like a car with a steering wheel.
Yeah, sure.
There's brakes, you have to adjust them up, and you have to adjust them
accordingly, you know. So I couldn't drive it for long enough to even adjust the brakes, but we got it loaded on. We got it there. But on the journey there, one of the balls in the carburetor had fractured and sank.
One of the, so yeah, the float.
They've got two updraft Zenith carburetors, and one of the floats had fractured and filled it with water and sank. Of course, we didn't know that. So we've...
Filled with petrol.
Filled with petrol. Yeah, filled with petrol. It didn't sink in the water. So we went to start it, and of course, it wouldn't start, and there was petrol running out of everywhere, which isn't good.
No,
on a tank.
Quite. Yeah.
So we had to have it dragged off with another vehicle, and then we were up till... We were debriefing the tank literally the next
day. Yeah, we were there till 1 o'clock that morning, mending it.
Yeah.
Because we had to mend it
to be ready
as well.
Yeah. Right.
With the engine in the tank, which you're not meant to do, you have no room.
Yeah.
We'd all lost our patience with it because it was a very fiddly job where you had to.
We were down to iPhone.
The little locating pin had to be slid through the locator on the side of the engine, through the bore, through the float that you're having to hold in place with your hand, and then line it up with the other side as well.
And
all of that.
And while doing
in
that,
in the dark, while you can't see it, because you can't see where you're working.
And the only access to get into it is with the radiators up, upside down, with your head resting on the clutch in between the two cooling fans.
Yeah.
It was awful.
That sounds hellish.
It was awful.
No, it was terrible.
But we did it because we had to.
Yeah.
We didn't have
so much. Many people expected to see it. That vehicle was the biggest thing for that year.
That FV4.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and of course,
managed to get it done, didn't we? And
then yeah,
we got about 6 hours sleep. Had to be back there at 8 o'clock because that's when it was still.
No, I'm not going
to
be early.
No, he was useless.
And we have to be nice to people.
Yeah,
like, you can't be nice in the morning, can you?
And then we did that first day, didn't we?
Yeah, honestly, and that was the most daunting moment of my life when we started it up and we thought, now I've got to drive it around in front of the.
Yeah,
they've all paid to see it, and like we started off, and honestly, I was myself like. Mm. Going on.
It really was hilarious, to be honest.
And in fairness to it, it went absolutely perfect.
Well, it did and it didn't. It engine-wise, it drove perfectly, but it would not steer.
Oh, yeah.
Because we'd tried to adjust it, but we didn't have much free play on the tracks.
Right.
So we'd got round just about. We'd done like one lap and we were like, we can't. We were meant to do two and we couldn't do the second lap because we were like, it's just not going to turn.
Steer it.
So we came out that day, we'd done our bit that we were meant to do, so we were like, oh, we stayed the rest of the day, met the people that had sponsored it and whatnot. So then that evening, we had to then mend that issue as well. And what we had to do was free the front idler off, which we hadn't done because we hadn't had time.
Right.
So it was all seized solid.
Yeah, we had to take
a trap link out because the trap was too tight, too slack. So basically, we were trying to do that, and we'd come to the point where it was obviously seized, it wasn't going to move. And at this point, by the time we got to that point, it was about 8 o'clock at night. So everybody at the tank museum had gone home and we're there struggling. And, they'd left out for us very kindly, a little forklift
with no keys,
but the gas kind.
Right.
Now they hadn't left the keys with it because they hadn't thought anybody would have wanted to use it, but
I had a Leatherman.
We needed to use it. So we jammed the Leatherman in the side and jump started it. And what we proceeded to do was ram into the front idler as hard as we could with the forklift
to push it
to get it to move backwards so that we could take a link out and then do the track back up. And we gave it some pure stick.
Yeah, that whole liquid.
Yeah, that's that forklift won't be the same ever again. So what we did is we never told a soul. We parked it back up exactly where we found it, took it, Leatherman outside us.
It was fine.
Once we'd done it, it was fine, yeah. And I think they're still using it now, so it can't be that bad.
Well, you didn't get a phone call.
Something will be better. It probably picks up with two forks that look at each other. Can't it? It's like probably like he's got a lazy arm. That's the thing.
But that was we had to do that really to because it was the main thing the weekend. And in fairness, like
we didn't want to the Friday was kind of like the dress rehearsal almost.
Right.
We didn't want to have to only do one lap on the two main days. So we were like, well, we'll fix that and then we'll be able to do two laps and do
first
it properly.
Proper big
thing
for us as a team.
Yeah, it was. Right. First big major.
It mattered to us that the public, you know, we
didn't
want to let
think
the public
we were a bunch of idiots.
Well, we are a bunch of idiots, but we didn't want to let people down. A lot of people had watched us restore it and were looking forward to seeing it in person, weren't we?
Mm. Yeah.
But the other thing is, because it was a prototype vehicle, no one actually knew how it drove.
Yeah.
All the reports of it said that it used to get hot, like it started to boil after so long, and it steered badly.
Yeah,
and that's because the gun was so long.
It's so heavy.
It didn't steer right because the centre of balance was terrible.
Right.
So it really is a horrible thing to drive around.
Yeah. So what we did only made it marginally better.
Yeah.
Okay.
It still is horrible to drive, but like you said,
but it looks great.
It's not is not fully designed properly.
It never really got off the drawing
board. No.
They sort of did that as a...
They did that. They made the shell around the gun, and that was it, really.
Yeah. The last time they fired the gun, because it's 183 mil, last time they fired the gun, it broke the gun.
Right.
That big. Like, they even said that no one could be in the turret when they fired it because it was dangerous.
Yeah.
And last time they fired it, it snapped the elevation shaft clean off, so the gun was just like, got no elevation.
Yeah.
Because there was that much recoil. So the back of it, there was a great big like anchor, and that was to stop it shoving the whole tank back too far.
Right.
The forces on that was insane.
Mm.
I even said this, so basically, if you could picture a deck gun off a ship,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
basically what they'd cobbled together.
Put in all tank.
It's a formidable looking
thing. Oh, it's a fair thing. Yeah, too long.
Check out the Mr. Hughes YouTube channel if you've got no idea what we're rattling on about. It is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And like you say, to turn that thing around, like from the starting point to where you got it is absolutely unreal.
It was a fair achievement.
And that's why we do it. Well, you know, it's there's the thing that money can't buy, and that's this sense of achievement. Restoring it, and well, not going to say restoring, but keeping all this stuff alive, there's a massive sense of achievement. It's like going, yeah, that was horrible, but we've done that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's going to survive. It will, you know, that'll probably still be in the museum when we're long dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people look at that going, what stupid tank? You know what I mean? But a lot of people like it, you know, and it's so unique. And for us to work on one of the only type in the world, you know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bragging point, isn't it?
Definitely.
But and then since then, you know, we just work on normal tanks. So isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because we sat around it.
I wouldn't call them normal, but
so boring.
Yeah, it is. It's terribly boring.
You've got some really cool
stuff. Yeah, we've got some cool projects, and we've got a couple of chieftains. We've got the M60 we're doing bits on.
We tend to try and do stuff for the museums as well.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, we're trying to get into that. Although, actually getting them to agree for us to do work for them is very hard work, because museums don't have a lot of money to spend on things like that.
Right.
We try and do it for as cheap as we possibly can.
Well, ultimately,
but you can't do it for nothing.
No, of course not. No.
And it's like the last one. Really, it should have cost them probably northwards of £100,000 for us to do that.
Yeah, this is what people don't
know. And we managed to do it for, I think, somewhere in the region of £30,000, didn't we? I think, in total.
Well,
our bill was
less than 20, but
So, which isn't all, we thought was really good.
Mm.
That's only possible because of the channel and people watching the videos. So we could say to the museum, look, we can take on the restoration and cover most of the costs. So we're going to fix your tank for you for next to nothing. Mm. We just need you to pay for welding wire, metalwork, paint, stuff like that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and like Jack says, to restore, say, that chieftain tank there, you'd need to, if you were to take that to any other company to have that restored, you'd need to probably find £100,000,
£150,000
just to restore it.
Yeah.
Like, it's an incredibly expensive...
It's quite a mammoth undertaking, and don't get me wrong, people charge a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
But you can understand why they do.
Definitely, yeah.
We just have the luxury of, because of the channel, we can charge less.
Yeah, it gives people the opportunity, who would normally have the opportunity to get something sorted.
Ooh.
And I think that's quite good, because we wouldn't have had the opportunity to do it without the channel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of helped us, and it's like, well, actually, you know, to keep it interesting, we can actually help other people and be able to be quite fair with them.
Mm, absolutely.
Just literally charge them the bare minimum cost of what it is.
Yeah.
But we do tend to try and really just do our own stuff, because we can film it how we want.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what happens. As you probably tell, we don't take anything too seriously. Stuff breaks. People freak out about things breaking, don't they? They're worried, oh, I don't want to use this, because I'm going to break it. Why?
Yeah.
Why have it? If you're not going to use whatever vehicle you've got, if you're who are you saving it for?
Absolutely.
You know, that's what I don't understand with people. They wait their whole life, put a car in a garage,
won't
use it.
Yeah.
You think, who are you saving it for?
Rust can be fixed, damage can be fixed.
You're like, oh, well, it's worth X, Y, and Y. Sell it then.
Yeah.
If all you're worried about money, sell it. And you'll do nothing with that. You need to go and enjoy your life. And I like to say, you know, we do enjoy when we go out and play with them.
Yeah, 100%.
It's one
of our favourite times of year when we get to go to shops.
We don't want
to
break the engine. Yeah, we could break the engine, An engine for that chief and tank freezer is probably £20,000 if you break it.
Yeah.
No one can afford to lose £20,000. But what's the point of having it if you're not going to have a go at playing with it? And to be honest, really, we're not at the stage now where we tried to break them. And they don't break, you know. And the funny thing is...
That's what we could do with is more work.
Give me problem. But the funny thing is with these military vehicles is they don't get a lot of use, and that's their biggest downfall.
Yeah.
They need regular use. People,
they were designed to be used every day to the maximum.
Yeah, and when you use them a lot, actually, it's better for them.
Yeah, they give you less problems when you use them regular.
You know, when you park them up, seals go dry, they drop the oil on the floor, you know, you start having electrical trouble. But when you keep the systems warm and the gearbox working, you know, they are a lot more reliable. As we use them every year, I would say our minimum breakdowns go less and less.
Yeah,
you know,
got you.
Which doesn't make sense, does it? Whereas most people go, oh, I dare use it because it's very reliable, I worry about breaking it.
Preach the same about Land Rovers, which as things go, as like older vehicles go, Land Rovers don't actually mind sitting around as much as a lot of other classic cars. But they're designed to
be over it for 2 years. The first thing goes the master cylinder.
Absolutely.
The brakes.
Clutch drum brakes, cylinders.
There you go.
That's a given, really. But yeah, like you say, no one's gonna get, you know, in their twilight years and go, God, I'm really glad I kept that car in such nice condition.
Yeah. Now I'm so knackered I can't press the clutch button.
Get out and have a laugh with it.
Yeah. Mm. I think that's the most important.
Well, yeah, I mean, my old man was always a big lover of the phrase, there's no point being the richest man in the graveyard.
No.
And I totally agree with it.
And Liz totally agrees. Jack lives on the breadline. I think.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah. To be honest, every bit of money that we make on this channel literally goes back into the channel. Mm. You probably see that I'm not in designer clothes because I'm not interested in...
You're in your own.
You've got a Gucci belt inside.
I drive a Transit van worth about £2.50. And I love it.
Yeah, but his handbag collection's unmatched.
No, I think they're wise words to live by.
Yeah.
And I think on that note, we will probably wrap it up there. But before we do that, we'll give you Mr. Hughes. Check him out on YouTube and Instagram. And you're on Facebook as well?
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all those things.
All of the socials.
Not OnlyFans.
No.
Despite the side of your Defender, which proudly has... was that Luke, was it?
Yeah, people must be timed Mr. Hughes OnlyFans. I never even thought about that, but yeah. I've left out because I thought it was funny. Mrs. doesn't like it, but I think it's funny.
Thank you ever so much for inviting us out. Again, it was really good fun. Had a great day. And you'll see it soon in Land Rover Monthly. Please do subscribe to the magazine or go out and buy it, because brand new content every single month. Sign up to the newsletter. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook, Land Rover Monthly, Land Rover Martin, Steve, who's not here, Steve Miller Automotive. And that's enough of the plugs. Thanks again, guys, for having us. And we'll see you next week.
See you later.
See you later.
What would you do if I hadn't recorded any of that?
Done.